Chicago's College Tailgate. Now back to the show with Shay and Tyler on ESPN Chicago.
College Tailgate every single Saturday morning, 9 to 11 a.m. with you on ESPN Chicago, Tyler Rocky and Shane Norling. We've been talking all things Indiana college football playoff. I do want to flip to the other matchup that we saw in the college football playoff because, boy, that was a hell of a game that we saw Thursday night as Miami advances to the national championship after a 31-27 win over Ole Miss. And we can talk about Miami a little bit later on. We'll continue to talk about Miami because they still have a game to play. But what Ole Miss did this season, after being abandoned by their head coach right before their playoff run, Pete Golding is elevated not just on an interim basis but permanently as the head coach at Ole Miss. 41-10 on Tulane. An instant classic against Georgia that they had to come back from an 8-point deficit at halftime. And then this game against Miami, at a certain point, you always kind of felt like the magic was going to run out with Ole Miss. But that's not to take away from what this season was, because all of a sudden, a team that began the season as a Lane Kiffin coach team became America's team by the time they got to the playoff, because everyone was pulling on the rope for the Ole Miss Rebels, the way that they were abandoned heading into the playoff and then didn't just win one game but won a couple and almost found themselves in the national title game.
I was pulling hard for it too, man. I mean, the way that even after Carson Beck runs in that touchdown, you look, you're like, there's 23 seconds left. What chance does Ole Miss have to get the ball to the 40 in two plays?
Yeah.
Chambliss was just dialed. This whole playoff run, Chambliss was...
A shame he's not going to get a 60. Like, there is the part of me that always goes, all right, now, time to move on. But seeing Trinidad Chambliss, I don't think I would have complained if we saw another year of him.
I've read some stuff like he still could. They could sue the NCAA. But I also question, like, at what point do you start to look at this draft board and wonder if you're going to start being quarterback too? After the performance Dante Moore put on tape last night, like, I don't think it's a totally unfair argument to say, maybe Chambliss is just QB2 in the draft.
I think it's going to get to a point, though, where pro days happen, combines happen, and it's like, all right.
The reality is he was at Ferris State for a reason.
There's still a chance Dante Moore is QB1. Probably not going to happen after what we saw and the way it happened in the Peach Bowl.
Yeah.
But there's still a chance he's QB1 after everyone goes through the draft process.
But I think it would be – Ole Miss is a tough one to quantify because – I said all year, like, they should be the same level of story as Indiana. They have had no success since the 1960s. This was the greatest year in their history in 60 seasons. And it was all marred because Lane Kiffin told them they weren't pretty enough. That always bothered me a little bit. And I think we should remember more about Ole Miss, the players who were on the field, who told Lane Kiffin, shove it.
Yeah,
that's the biggest part to me is, like, Lane was offering them all transfer eligibility, and Chambliss said, shove it. Half the O-line said, shove it. You get players tweeting because guys were like, yeah, this locker room, they all want to go with Lane. Then you have players tweeting the reports going, that is not what happened. I respect every player in that locker room. I respect all the coaches who didn't leave. Like, that's the other thing. The idea Ole Miss was in this game to the extent that they were, where they had a lead with 30 seconds to go, despite the fact four assistant coaches left them midweek.
Mm-hmm. And some came back, too. Like, we want to talk about the Oregon side of things. Will Stein's got a program that he's got to go run now, right?
Yep.
Was his eye off the ball? I don't think you could say that about any of those Ole Miss guys that went to LSU.
And the idea that before the Miami game, I get Lane Kiffin was like, look, if you want to come work with me, you can go coach in the first playoff game in the semifinal. The reality is Lane Kiffin never thought they would beat Georgia. So after they did, he's like, guys, it's time. Let's go. Come on. The idea that four assistants went to LSU to help build the team, and I understand they have a job to do, but you're in the national semifinal and they left, and Ole Miss still damn near won the game. You have to tip your cap to those players. And honestly, without a critical mistake by Pete Golding, you have 3rd and 10 against Carson Beck and you decide to rush 3 and have a spy. Like, just blitz him.
Heat him up, yeah. I mean, Carson Beck wasn't great in the game.
No.
Made a couple of really
He was clutch in the fourth
plays.
Quarter.
Yeah. I mean, the way that this game was going, you had an Ole Miss team that had a lead, and just the back and forth nature of this game, too, everything about it was, it felt like we were going to get, like the game was going to be put on Carson Beck's arm, and ultimately it ended up being on his legs, but it felt like we were waiting for that combustible Carson Beck moment that we've seen rear its head so many times,
yeah.
And we didn't really get it. Like, he had the interception, but like, I thought it was going to be like a crunch time, big time mistake. And that's the reason why we see Ole Miss moving on and not Miami. Never saw it. And I think he deserves some credit for that.
Yeah, I think Cristobal has avoided the critical mistakes that have marred his entire career. You think about the Georgia Tech game, when he could have knelt it out running a play that results in a fumble and you lose. Every year there's some hysterical mismanagement from Mario Cristobal. This year, he has largely avoided that.
Yeah.
I get he stubbed his toe a couple times in the regular season, but the stakes are way higher now. And outside of the ridiculous punt decision against Texas A&M, he's been great. So you have to tip your hat to a Miami team that has avoided critical mistakes that often have haunted them. But I also tip my cap to an Ole Miss team that really had no business getting this far after their coaching staff gave up on them and still damn near got to the national title.
Well, I mean, both you and I thought there was a world that Tulane wins the game.
Yeah.
Against Ole Miss. It wasn't what we were necessarily picking. We did think that Tulane would cover the spread, and they ran off the field, ran out of the Grove. And Ole Miss just along the way. Then you get to that Georgia game, and we're like, all right, can you really do this without your head coach against this Georgia team? Not that this is like some all-time Georgia team, but it's a damn good Georgia team. Can you do this again? And I think all the credit in the world goes to Trinidad Chambliss because of what he's done. And you talk about the draft stock. We weren't even talking about Trinidad Chambliss as a draft quarterback. Now, all of a sudden, I think Mel Kiper's got him at 4 among his QBs. He's QB4. If Ty Simpson's in the draft, you tell me which quarterback you want. I saw you play pretty much the same schedules. I saw one guy show up in the playoff, one guy not. You can't pin the Ole Miss season coming to an end on Trinidad Chambliss. You just can't.
No, he was stellar. Dude, he was awesome in the playoff. He was incredible against Georgia. And the fourth quarter, going bar for bar with the best we've seen from Carson Beck. He was great. I think you just have to give the ultimate credit to Trinidad Chambliss and the Ole Miss players for sticking around, seeing it out, and the tenacity they showed despite all their coaches kind of giving up.
Call it what it is. For giving a middle finger to Lane Kiffin on the entire run. For giving a middle
Which
finger
I
to Lane Kiffin.
Which I appreciate because I'd like to give a middle finger to Lane Kiffin.
Go ahead.
I'd love nothing more in life than to see Lane Kiffin and just flip him the bird. Guy's insufferable. I mean, imagine the idea that you are going to the college football playoff at Ole Miss. This program that you built up from nothing. I still can't ever get over it. You've become this redemptive figure in college football. People liked Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss. His image was wildly improved. And you take all of it and throw it in the dumpster because LSU just massaged your ego. How insecure of a human being do you have to be that LSU massaging your fragile ego and throwing money at you was like, I'll give up the best situation I've ever had where my image has taken a remarkable step up. I'll throw it all in the garbage because LSU is a prettier brand.
It's
never going to stop being dumb to me.
Yeah.
And I know you might disagree with this. I still have a hard time believing Lane Kiffin will ever get LSU to the mountaintop that Ole Miss got to this year.
No, I agree with you on that. I agree with you on that. I think that this Ole Miss team and what they accomplished this year and the fashion in which they did in the playoff, because everyone wrote them off at the start of the playoff. Everyone wrote them off. Us included. Us included. Like, hand up. We were clearly wrong on this. And I'm happy to be wrong with a team like Ole Miss. Wasn't that I wasn't rooting for them. I just thought that this Ole Miss team, you lose that head coach. What does it look like? Fracture in the locker room, especially with the assistants. You got a guy whose defense wasn't great this year. It was good, not great. But now the guy who was running that defense has to oversee the entire team and the entire operation as opposed to just his defense. And then the other side of it, too, with Trinidad Chambliss and the run that he went on this year, now all of a sudden he's a pretty intriguing draft prospect. Like, we were talking, my roommate's a Steelers fan. If you're the Steelers and you're going to be drafting somewhere in the 20s this year, isn't that probably the guy you want to pick?
I think Steelers fans would be thrilled with
that. That would be a great, I mean, we're not talking about drafting in the 20s and you're getting Kenny Pickett. This feels a little bit different. You're kind of riding the underdog story here because all of a sudden the underdog story resets itself when he becomes an NFL player, even if he is a first round pick.
By the way, this is the same quarterback that at one point this season, Lane Kiffin took a podium and said, my quarterback makes too many Division II plays. Mm-hmm. If you needed more reason to hate Lane Kiffin, like you have a quarterback who transferred to you, chose you, knowing he was likely a backup, gets forced into action because of the Austin Simmons injury, does nothing but win you football games. You take a podium and say, my quarterback makes too many Division II plays, and then you bail on him.
Yeah.
F Lane Kiffin.
He was finally likable, man. He was finally likable. It would be like if Notre Dame had done something that was just so terrible. Because, like, Lane Kiffin's always going to have some of his, like, supporters and stuff like that. But, like, Notre Dame is a team that a lot of people love to hate. I can't hate a Marcus Freeman-led team. I respect Marcus Freeman and what he's done and the way that he's gone about everything. It would be like if they fired Marcus Freeman just to bring back Brian Kelly. Like, that is the type of that's the way I'm kind of wrapping it in my brain of what Lane Kiffin did and the way that he abandoned Ole Miss. He was finally likable, or at least tolerable. You could respect him for what he built, and then he just pissed it all away.
It was very similar, too, to the Brian Kelly situation at Notre Dame because Lane Kiffin wasn't in the room when they met with the players. He made the decision. He went to the president or the AD's house. He had the argument about wanting to coach the team through the playoffs. They said no, as they should, because once you're the coach at LSU, you can never walk into Ole Miss's locker room. And then he's not at the meeting to tell the players. He's already in Baton Rouge. And by the way, nice job attending LSU's bowl game this year and leaving immediately after the national anthem.
Yeah. And you want to claim Ole Miss and then show up at the LSU women's basketball game. Real nice stuff. Real nice stuff, Lane Kiffin. All right. When we come back, there is a bigger part of this, too. The SEC has been eliminated. And it's time to have an honest conversation about what the SEC is and what it's going to be moving forward. We'll do that next. It's Chicago's College Tailgate with Tyler and Shay.
Now back to the show. Chicago's College Tailgate has it all with Shay and Tyler on ESPN Chicago.
Chicago's College Tailgate rolling along here on Saturday morning with you, 9 to 11 every single Saturday morning. All right, it's time to have the SEC conversation, all right? By the way, Paul Feinbaum, is he leaving the country?
Yeah, Paul Feinbaum at the start of the season said that if an SEC team wasn't in the national title, he would leave the country. So pack your bags, Paul.
Don't forget your passport.
I'll tell you something. SEC media having a meltdown everywhere you look. Peter Burns flipping out. Courtney's going to have a field day on Best Week Ever tomorrow. She's just ripping Peter Burns to shreds because Indiana's in the national title and the SEC is gonzo. At some point, and there have been social media graphics thrown around. There was one I read to you last week we didn't get to on the air. But it was a comparison of Minnesota over the last five seasons against LSU over the last five seasons. Win percentage was about the same. Mm-hmm. Record versus FCS schools was about the same. record versus AP top 25 teams was about the same. The only difference was that LSU had like 46 weeks in the top 25 and Minnesota had one. And the reality that I think we're seeing play out over the last three seasons, SEC bias is a real thing that needs to end.
I think, I don't want to say this year was the nail in the coffin, but the hammer started hammering, for sure. I look at what happened this year and the way that the SEC has just completely bowed out of this playoff. I mean, you talk about getting embarrassed. With the exception of Ole Miss, the SEC got embarrassed.
But even
this time around,
Ole Miss, like, even put Ole Miss into the conversation. Who did they beat? They beat Tulane and another SEC school.
No, I know. And that's part of why, like, the embarrassment. Like, the SEC versus SEC matchups. It was a rare thing where you see the SEC coming out like a loser. The fact that Oklahoma had Alabama pinned down the way that they did and just let Alabama weasel themselves back into the game. The Texas A&M showing goes without saying. That was one of the most embarrassing performances I've seen on a football field in the college football playoff. We've seen group of five teams put up better games than what we saw from Texas A&M. The Ole Miss Georgia game, great game, all right? But for the health of the conference, Ole Miss should not be winning that game.
The only wins that the SEC got in the playoff were either a G5 school or against each other. If they played another conference, they lost. Bama lost to the Big Ten. Texas A&M lost to the ACC. The only Ole Miss lost to the ACC. The only wins that the SEC got was off the SEC or Tulane. And if you expand it to the entire postseason, the SEC, when playing non-SEC opponents, 2-7. Check their non-con from September. It's also not good.
Right, and especially when you put it head-to-head with the Big Ten, and something we've been telling you for about a year now, maybe even longer, that this thing is changing because of NIL and the haves and the have-nots in the sport. The academics are the ones that are now in control. The academic institutions are the ones that have the money. If you have money, you can put together a great football team. Look at the two teams in the national championship and look at three of the four teams that made the Final Four this year. Oregon's got Nike. Indiana's got billionaire upon billionaire upon billionaire out of that Kelly Business School. And Miami's got Life Wallet. And it played out. That we're seeing it play out in real time now. And even, like, think about what some of the losses that, like, I say there's no shame in Ole Miss losing to Miami. And I there's no shame in that, in my opinion. However, let's not forget that we were talking about the ACC as a conference that was going to be shut out of the playoff because their conference champion was not good enough.
Well, and I'd also, like, go look at the top 25 and really try to sell yourself. Is Tennessee a top 25 team in America?
No.
And then I'll even take it further. Is there any reason that Vanderbilt is in the top 25 other than geographically they are in the SEC? Don't tell me that their postseason game doesn't mean anything. Diego Pavia played in it, and they got pumped by Mark Gronowski. Iowa popped them for 34. Is there any reason that you look at Vandy and go, convincingly, they are a top 20 team, other than they got to farm-ranked games off of other fake-ass teams in the SEC?
I would say this. You go 10-2 in your conference, you're probably a top 25 team. And this is not to say, like, oh, the SEC is the fourth of the Power Four. That ain't true. The SEC is still number two. But it's more because 3-4 are freaking terrible.
Yeah.
The Big 12 and the ACC have become absolute jokes. Now, I think some of that can change, especially in the ACC. Like, could we see the ACC getting really good with teams like North Carolina and Duke and Virginia and, like, some of those academic, even like a BC? If BC decided to take football seriously, BC could be among the best teams in all college football.
And they still have Florida State and Clemson and the added advantage. Miami might not be going away, guys, because ACC doesn't revenue share. Mm-hmm. Prize money for the CFP goes to entirely, which, by the way, Notre Dame, join the ACC. Your biggest benefit of being independent can happen in the ACC.
Yeah.
100% of the college football playoff prize money goes to the school. So Miami is getting $20 million for making the national title, plus the bonus, they get to play their game at Hard Rock in Coral Gables.
Yeah.
They get a $3 million travel budget they don't have to use. Put it in your pocket.
Yep.
Like $23 million is going to Miami for making the national title. So Miami now also gets a cash influx where the SEC schools aren't getting it. But I go back to the Vandy point. Here's what Vandy's resume is built off of to convince you that they are the 14th best team in America. They beat number 11 South Carolina.
Not a top 25 team.
South Carolina sucked. They beat number 10 LSU. Number 15, Missouri. They lost to Bama and they lost to Texas, but they beat 19th ranked Tennessee, another team I don't think should be in the top 25.
Yeah. Now, in fairness, they did go on the road and beat Tennessee by 21.
Yeah, but I'm making the broader point.
I get what you're saying.
These shouldn't be ranked wins. The only reason they're ranked wins is the geography. It's the implicit bias for this conference that because you exist in it, you are deserving of being ranked.
It's the same argument SEC people used to make probably within the last 5-7 years of, oh, you beat Iowa. When talking about like Ohio State or Michigan, you beat Iowa, who's ranked 19th or 21st. You beat Wisconsin, who's ranked 22nd. You beat 17th ranked Northwestern. It's the same argument that they used to make about the Big Ten.
Yep.
And now the Big Ten, you look at the playoff showing, you've got Indiana and Oregon. Now, whether or not Oregon you truly view as a Big Ten team is moot to me because you've been expanding too by tacking on teams like Oklahoma and Texas.
And it's also the narrative that bothers me the most in this sport that pops up lately is you talk about the Big Ten, and the Big Ten is, in all likelihood, going to have a 3-year run of national titles. And it's not like it's Ohio State ripping off all three. Michigan got the first one, asterisk. Ohio State got the second. Indiana might get the third. It's three different teams in each season coming up and winning a natty out of the Big Ten. But people still talk about the SEC versus the Big Ten, and they say things like, oh, well, in the SEC, it's a gauntlet. You don't get to go to Purdue. You have to go to Auburn. How do I know that's any more difficult?
These days, it's not.
How am I being convinced that going to Auburn is more difficult than going to Iowa City
or
going to Madison? Right, like that.
Mississippi State. Look at the conference record of some of these teams. You got Florida and Kentucky at 2-6. You got Auburn, Mississippi State, South Carolina 1-7. Arkansas 0-8. And even if you want to take, let's get rid of just the conference games here. You had six teams that finished sub 500 in your conference. Six. It's pathetic. Pathetic.
And I'm not selling that the bottom of the Big Ten is any great shakes. Michigan State is horrible. Yeah, like Northwestern blows. Purdue blows. Maryland this year was awful, almost inexplicably.
Rutgers, year after year.
I'm not trying to sell that the Big Ten is some unbelievable gauntlet. I'm just selling the SEC is not. And every time that these SEC teams have to leave their conference and play in a different conference, be it non-con in September or bowl games, they often get popped. Vandy getting punked by a mediocre Iowa tells you everything you need to know. And nobody can sell me, oh, but it's a meaningless bowl game. Then why did Pavia play?
The other part to this, too, is it's not to take away from the fact that some of this was true. Like, up until 2 or 3 years ago, it all was true. The SEC was by far and away the best conference. Like,
sure.
When we were getting those Georgia-Bama national title games, it was for a reason. It was because they were the two best teams, cream of the crop, and by far and away, the SEC was providing that challenge. What we're trying to tell you right now is it's changed.
Yep.
That the Big Ten, over the course of the last 3 years, has taken the mantle from them. They have not just taken the torch. They have ripped it out of the grasp of the SEC. And that's where we sit right now. You can't make the same old jokes that you used to be able to make about the Big Ten because it's a real thing now. They're putting together real football teams that are the top of the top. And it's not just Ohio State and Michigan anymore. There's legitimacy across the conference.
And it's
some of it has to do with expansion, but not all of it.
It's also expanding inside the conference because, like, Indiana gets Mark Cuban money. You know, Ohio State's crying poor a little bit this offseason, which is wild, drawing financial lines in the sand with Bo Jackson. He's probably going to transfer out. But Ohio State, we know, gets money. Oregon's got Phil Knight money.
That's a great pseudonym, like a hotel check-in name. Phil Duck.
Like, we know.
Michigan 37A.
Michigan catches Larry Ellison donations. Illinois's got big donors. Michigan State just caught a $400 million donation. Like, the money is flowing in the Big Ten in a way that it isn't in any other conference.
I mean, Northwestern's acting seriously right now. Let's call it what it is. Northwestern is acting like a serious program.
That's where I think we are. Whether you're willing to call it what it is or not is a different thing. And clearly, the biggest parts of media and college football are not. Because, let's just be real, there are partnerships at stake. The Big Ten has partnerships with networks that the SEC doesn't. So the SEC gets promoted a little stronger. But I do feel like if we're going to have honest discourse in this sport, you got to throw the network relationships away and just admit the Big Ten is where college football lives right now.
Mm-hmm. And even like these fringe teams, like you mentioned Illinois and what we're going to probably see with Wisconsin and Michigan State in the next couple of years. Penn State will be back sooner rather than later, I'd imagine, too. And I think an interesting team is Washington, who's dealt with their fair share of drama this offseason, which maybe we can hit on a little bit later in the show, too, by the way.
Yeah.
But Washington, they're a team that's on the rise, too. They've got the academic power there. Everything about Washington as a program and what they can be is impressive. They've got the coach. They may have one of the top three or four coaches in the conference.
They are also the prime example that I would hold up when anybody with like an SEC narrative tries to sell me. Ohio State doesn't have to go play it. Like, they don't have to go play in Oxford. Go play at UW. See how fun that is.
Go play at Autzen. Like, seriously, like these road games that you have to go on in the Big Ten are a pain in the ass. Even go to Camp Randall. It's a pain in the ass to have to go and play a game there. Even with a Badger team that's out of it.
Ask Oregon the last 2 years how fun it is to go play at Wisconsin.
Yeah. It ain't. I'll tell you that. It really isn't. 312-332-3776. Mark's on the Northwest side. What's going on, Mark?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. First time caller into your show. I always find it interesting, this SEC Big Ten complaints, right? Finally, NIL allows every NCAA team to pay, not just the SEC. You can go back and look. I think it was Coach O from LSU was on a morning program, and they asked him about paying, and he laughed and said, yeah, we paid our players. So back when they had their big run, they were paying players with boosters.
Yeah, you want to put an asterisk on Michigan's title. I think you can put one on LSU's, too.
Mark, the one thing I would say,
sorry to interrupt you, but I wanted to comment about the Michigan asterisk. I'm a huge Michigan fan. How about Ohio State when they would trade tapes with Purdue and other teams? They completely cheated.
Well,
everyone talks about the Michigan asterisk. Ohio State, Urban Meyer, first of all, scumball. They cheated just as well. They traded tape.
Mark, here, I say asterisk more in jest. I think Shay and I both agree. We've
likewise
removed the asterisk from Michigan
Listen.
Okay, I'll speak for myself. I've removed the asterisk from that Michigan run because you did it. Like, after all of the things came out, you did it without Harbaugh for a couple of games. You just went about your business, and you won a national title without that stuff.
Mark, my thing, I'll hit both points. Because one, on the paying players front, let's be real. The Big Ten was doing it too. Like, let's not act like the Ohio State wasn't paying players or Michigan wasn't paying players or like they were taking kids that could get into school as students. The Big Ten was doing it too.
He had a buddy who played against Randy Moss back in the day, and when he would go to those small schools, there'd be money in a shoe after he had done a recruiting trip.
No, it's of course everybody was doing it, but the reason the SEC never wanted it opened up to the extent that it's been opened up is because they can't match it financially. Like, now that you're allowed to just openly pay players, you're never going to match the alumni that the Big Ten schools have with the alumni that these SEC schools have. A lot of these SEC schools are pay to get a degree schools, and like, they aren't looking at needing elite academics. Every Big Ten school needs you to be pretty smart. And, hey, and a lot of these guys end up making a ton of money. On the second point on the asterisk, my point has never been that nobody else cheats. It has always been, I need Michigan fans to admit that they did. You are just as scummy as everyone else.
Yeah, to that time, and maybe the Fab Five as well, right? But man, a bunch of freshmen giving Duke a run. Sorry for making breakfast in the background.
Oh, you're good.
But, yeah, no, totally agree. But I just think Ohio State cheats a little more. And the SEC teams, right? When they graduate people who go work assembly lines and those jobs have been outsourced, how are they going to fund? But, you know, tough times. And up in the northwest suburbs here in Barrington, the amount of scholarships Alabama and the SEC is offering to students that don't need scholarships. Their families are wealthy, so they're trying to increase their grade point average and overall academics by bringing in kids from up here.
Yeah, no, it is a good point, Mark, and thanks for the phone call there. Yeah, like, I remember when I was going to college, Bama was offering full rides. I can't remember what the exact number was, but if you got like a 27 on your ACT, it was like full ride to Bama if you want it.
Jesus, I should have gone to Bama.
I had that too, Tyler. My parents said, no chance.
You're going to Bama?
And they're like, no, you're not going to survive.
Holy smokes.
You would be on the other side of this. You would be the station fine bomb if this happened and you went to Bama instead.
No, I really would. It's good I didn't go to an SEC school because I would be shameless.
We'd be
shameless.
Having a very different conversation this morning.
You just don't know what it's like. It just means more.
312-332-3776. You want to hop on in. The future of the SEC, what does it look like in the current climate of college sports? 312-332-3776. I've got a comp for that, too, of an old saying that my parents, and I'm sure a lot of parents out there used to have as well. All that's next. Chicago's College Tailgate here on ESPN Chicago.
Chicago's College Tailgate has it all. Now back to the show with Shay and Tyler on ESPN Chicago.
Chicago's College Tailgates. Don't forget, we've got wall-to-wall Bears for you starting at 11 a.m. Bears Bonanza with Carmen DeFalco, Jonathan Hood. Then it's the Playoff Spectacular with myself and Shay Norling. 3 to 5, you'll get the pregame tailgate. Jason McKee, Jeff Meller, Pat the Designer. Then after that, it's the Advantage Dealer Group Bears Network pregame show. Waddle, Sylvie, Dion Miller, all live from Soldier Field. Then it's kickoff 7 o'clock with Jeff Joniak, Tom Thayer, Jason McKee all on the call, and it'll all be followed up, hopefully, with a victorious Great Clips Bears Network postgame show with Yurko and Peggy. So can't wait for all of that. We've got you covered, all things Bears today. Huge game, biggest game the city's seen in 15 years. So we will be a wall-to-wall Bears for you coming up in about 20 minutes. But we're having the college football conversation right now. What is next for the SEC? We want to hear from you as well. 312-332-3776. The Big Ten has taken the torch from the SEC as the premier conference in college football. And if you disagree, we want to hear from you. Because if you want to just kind of ride the SEC coattails, and there's plenty of people out there that will, there's a whole damn network we were talking about during the break that will.
Yeah. Shamelessly, in fact.
But this is the Big Ten sport now. And it's not just football. It's basketball, too. Look at Michigan. We haven't talked much college basketball, the two of us, on the air. But Michigan right now is an absolute wagon in the sport.
And it's not just like Michigan either. Like, Michigan State has been back. Iowa's been good. Illinois's been good. Purdue's been great. Mm-hmm. Nebraska's off to a hot start.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Indiana's been playing better this year.
Yep. I think UCLA is going to be a very good team. They haven't looked the part so far yet, but I think UCLA is going to be very good too. The other part of it is And I think it goes for both football and basketball. Like, we had the Vanderbilt conversation already about what they are. Let's call it what it is, though. They are far superior to what the Vanderbilt teams used to be.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Vanderbilt used to be an absolute joke in the SEC.
Of course.
They're still one of the better teams in the SEC now. And look what they're doing in basketball. And what's the outlier that Vanderbilt has in the SEC? They're an outlier because they are the academic powerhouse of the entire conference.
Money.
They've got money. I mean, we've heard Jay Cutler go on the air on the station and talk about the contributions that he's making. He's like, I think he's even admitted, like, yeah, like, I'm chipping in, but, like, there are the big money donors that are really pushing these things. And you're seeing it in your own conference, too. Look at what just happened not the transfer portal, but in flat-out recruiting. Vanderbilt flipped the number one quarterback in the country from Georgia to Vandy.
Yep.
Tell that to someone 3 years ago.
On the same note, the number one quarterback in the country, and this is where the money plays a factor, and the SEC doesn't like the way it's played out now that everybody can spend publicly. Last year, whether the results were there or not, the number one quarterback in the country took a bribe to go to Michigan, and he had committed to LSU. It adds to, you're giving up on a premium SEC brand to go to Ann Arbor, because the Big Ten schools, they could just pay more.
Yeah. I mean, you can keep on just up in the bid, to a point where the SEC teams get squeezed out.
And then you even have schools like Texas Tech has reloaded in the portal. They're another school that's not going to go away from what they did this year because they've got the oil money.
Yeah, and that's the difference with Texas Tech and Texas. It's like the SEC, the big money donors there, they own gas stations. The big money donors in the SEC, they are in the Texas schools, they own the oil that the gas stations have to buy. So 312-332-3776. We'll get to your phone calls in just a second. The comparison I wanted to make, did your parents ever make this have this conversation with you? Like, don't be a bully. Like, don't bully the nerds in high school, because eventually the bully ends up working for the nerd.
Yeah.
Right? That, to me, is what we're seeing right now play out in college football in real time.
I love that comp.
Because the bullies were the SEC. Forever, the bully was the SEC. We were bigger, faster, stronger than you. We'd stuff you in a locker. But now the nerds are taking it over because they've got the CEO-level jobs. They are the top tier in terms of tax brackets, and they're the ones now funding the teams.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, the best players, they want to go play for the nerds and not the bullies anymore.
Yep.
That's what we're seeing play out in real time right now.
Go nerds.
It's a big win for the nerds. Between analytics and Big Ten athletics, you're seeing a big win for the nerds right now. 312-332-3776. Pat's in Kentucky. What's going on, Pat?
What's up, fellas? Love the show.
Thanks, man.
Hey, I'm glad you brought nerds up, too. I was probably one of those two in junior high.
We all were, man.
Yeah, no worries.
You're talking
dude.
To two.
Paul Finebaum, I'll help him pack his bags. I mean, he needs to get over himself.
The whole SEC needs to get over themselves. I heard Ryan Clark on, I think it was First Take yesterday, and Ryan Clark did this grand presentation about how Miami, of all the teams in the playoffs, most resembles an SEC team, even more so than the SEC teams. And I'm just watching it like, dude, how shameless can we possibly be? That even when the SEC's getting knocked out, we got to make up how one of these teams is an SEC team, actually.
And let me tell you this, Miami more closely resembles a Big Ten team than an SEC
of course.
Team right now. And if Miami were to defect from the ACC, and thanks for the call, Pat, if Miami were to defect from the ACC, they're not going to the SEC. They would go to the Big Ten before they went to the SEC.
Sure.
I think almost any team that were to defect right now would be doing that. 312-332-3776. We'll take more of your phone calls when we come back. Chicago's College Tailgate.
Now back to the show. Chicago's College Tailgate has it all with Shay and Tyler on ESPN Chicago.
Thanks to Mario Heron for producing today's show. Don't forget, we're wall-to-wall Bears coming up a little less than 10 minutes from now. Carmen DeFalco and Jonathan Hood are up next. Then it's followed by myself and Shay Norling, 1-3. And then you'll get the pregame tailgate, J-Mac, Pat the Designer, Jeff Meller, followed by the Advantage Dealer Group, Bears Network pregame show, Sylvie Dion and Waddle, all live from Soldier Field. And then it's kickoff between Bears and Packers. Jeff Joniak, Tom Thayer, Jason McKee on the call, followed up by the Great Clips Bears Network postgame show with Yurko and Peggy. Back out to the phones, talking about the Big Ten, SEC, two ships crossing in the night right now. Brett's in Indy. What's going on, Brett?
Hey, love the show, guys. Appreciate you taking my call. The Big Ten has 100% surpassed the SEC. I don't think it's close. Shay, I think you mentioned a little earlier, too, with basketball. The SEC's never been relevant in basketball except for Kentucky. Bama's had good years here and there, but that's always been a Big Ten sport. But it's nerds, money, the CEOs. I'm a diehard Purdue fan, and even they've started to find their donors where it's tough to get worse, so it's got to get better eventually, right? And what IU's done is great, but as a Purdue fan, this is my nightmare. And I really don't like it. Can Ohio State please win again?
Wow.
Wow.
So much so. Brett, are you making this call from the front steps of the NCAA offices as well? That's what I want to know from down in Indy. Thanks for the phone call, Brett. Appreciate it.
Drew Brees isn't walking through that door.
Drew Brees, I don't know if he has the money to compete with some of these other. He doesn't have Larry Ellison money.
I meant to play quarterback. That's what Purdue's got problems.
Yeah. I always would think that a school that doesn't have like the football pedigree would latch on to that a little bit more. Anytime Purdue plays in any game of some consequence, you see Drew Brees brought up. And I'm talking from a football lens only here. You see Drew Brees brought up. They can't get enough of Drew Brees. But I'm surprised that they haven't used that as more of like a tool for pumping up the football program.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm just blind to it, but I feel like that's a big-time tool. Like, that's a guy that a lot of these kids that are coming up right now that are in high school or in the portal, that's a guy you watch be a superstar for years.
Yeah. The reality is you got to get somebody, like Stanford's doing with Andrew Luck, getting involved in the program so that he can get some fundraising going. If they just got Drew Brees in some level involved to inspire fundraisers, I think they'd have a shot at getting big money. And that's the way to do it now. The book is out. If you want to win in college football in 2025, 2026, spend money. That's it.
Yeah, that's all there is to do. Speaking of spending money, too, I do want to get to this one story that we had from earlier in the week surrounding Damon Williams, the former. I don't know if it's former. He may be back. I'm not exactly sure what's going on here. Quarterback at Washington.
I was in such a good mood.
So He enters the transfer portal with a no-contact tag after signing a deal just a couple days prior that locked him into a multi-year agreement with Washington. He enters the portal with a no-contact tag. What's going on here? It's gotten to a point, and I think he was getting like $4 million a year, too, as a result of this deal. That's what pretty much the going rate is if you want a big-time quarterback in Power Conference football now. His agency dropped him. I don't know what's going on here. And now it's gotten to a point where Washington's looking to sue, and now there's a world where he comes back to Washington. The whole thing's gotten so messy right now with Damon Williams that I have a feeling he's going to be looking on the outside, being like, what the hell did I do when this thing's all said and done?
And by the way, I don't know how he ever goes back into that locker room. Because did you hear about how his teammates found out that he was transferring?
Was it through social media?
They were all at a memorial for a Washington soccer player who passed away from kidney cancer. They were at a memorial, a funeral. And they found out through social media at a funeral that Damon Williams was leaving the team after signing the contract. So now he's announcing his return to Washington because his agent said, dude, get effed. I have a feeling what happened was Lane Kiffin woke up in a panic, realizing Bryce Underwood and Trinidad Chambliss both said, nah. and just like panic called Damond Williams. Can I get you to come? What are they paying you? I'll give you $6 million. Because the rumor, the reporting around it is he had a $6 million offer. LSU was one of the interested parties. I have a feeling Lane called him and said, I'll take you. Here's $6 million. So he enters the portal with a no contact clause. But then Washington hits him with a lawsuit threat, and his agent's like, what are you doing?
I'm not doing this. Yeah.
So his agent fires him after this entire team found out on social media at a funeral that he was leaving. How do you ever walk back into that locker room? None of your teammates can ever trust you again. You've burnt up all the goodwill.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised he's... Like, Washington and Jed Fish clearly want him. I get that there's been drama along the way, but Washington and Jed Fish clearly want him.
Yeah,
if they're
going to
welcome him back, I mean, he's a hell of a player.
Well, do they want Damond Williams the person, or do they want Damond Williams more than the alternative of we don't know who our quarterback is? Because he's a good player.
I don't think there's as much bad blood between head coach and quarterback.
Maybe not.
As maybe it seems like there is or should be in this given moment. I don't know. It's interesting, but. We're going to continue to see stuff like this. And when you've got guys signing deals and then walking back on them, that's where you're going to really find yourself in a mess here.
This CBS Sports article I'm reading after he's announced his return is quoting an anonymous source that said the backlash and realizing you might have to pay all the money back is the reason he returned. Public criticism and the realization that he might have to pay UW $4 million.
Did you see there's a million, like now we're seeing buyouts in player contracts too. You see that with Brennan Sorsby? There's like $1 million buyout associated with him.
I think like obviously they need a commissioner, they need to unionize, but then it's who's going to do it? Like what are you going to get? Is there a CBA fairy flying around that's just going to drop an agreement?
It's all messy. All right, we'll be back with you next week. We'll also be back with you at 1 o'clock. Carmen and Hoodie, rather, coming up next here. Bears Bonanza. Wall-to-wall Bears for you up until midnight tonight on ESPN Chicago.